Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. The word underdog is overused in the context of sports, but when it comes to Floyd Little, it's an apt term. Little was born into poverty, one of six children raised by a single mother in Waterbury, Connecticut, who struggled in school and had to keep his burgeoning football talent a secret from his protective and worried mother. The first time she found out he was a special talent was when he announced his scholarship to play at Syracuse, where the running back became a three-time All-American before embarking on a nine-year career with the Denver Broncos. The football side of Little's story might have ended there, since he also graduated from the University of Denver Law School and eventually returned to his alma mater as a special assistant to the athletic director. But instead, he teamed with the co-author of his new memoir, Promises to Keep, Tom Mackey, who idolized Little as a child and eventually mounted a campaign to get his hero enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. Those dreams finally came true in 2010, when the five-time Pro Bowler gained football immortality. Promises to Keep is published by Triumph Books, and it's a pleasure to welcome Floyd Little to the Roundtable. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Great introduction. I appreciate that.
So the title of the book, Promises to Keep, refers to a moment where you reasserted your life and sort of took control of what you were going to do. Can you describe what exactly that moment was like?
Well, I had made some promises during my lifetime to my dad, as I mentioned in my Hall of Fame speech, that he told me he had chosen me to take his place and to do what he couldn't do and to finish what he could not finish. And I promised him that I would do all that I could do in school to get back in school and fulfill the commitment that I made to him. And then Ernie Davis, the same with Ernie. Ernie came to recruit me in New Haven, Connecticut, and I promised him that I'd go to Syracuse. And I really had planned to go elsewhere. I had an opportunity to go to West Point, and then I had an opportunity to go to Notre Dame. But Ernie Davis died 3 months after I made the promise. So I wound up having to go to Syracuse because of the promise I made to Ernie. And there was other promises I made along the way to my son. If I ever got nominated to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, he would present me. And one of the great poems that I enjoyed was Robert Frost stopping by Woods on a snowy evening when he said in his poem, "I got miles to go before I sleep and promises to keep." And that's how I started my book and that's how I ended it.
When you first arrived at Syracuse, as you mentioned, the man who had recruited you was no longer there. What was that transition like for you?
Well, you know, I wanted to come and fulfill the dream that Ernie Davis had. You know, being the first African-American to win the Heisman and going on to do great things, being the first-round draft pick for the Cleveland Browns and signing a long-term contract with Pepsi. He had committed to me that these are the kinds of things that I could acquire by going to Syracuse. But more importantly, the quality of education that I would get if I had considered Syracuse. And it was like coming in and fulfilling a dream that he had and that he had experienced. And for me, I wanted to be able to do the things that Ernie could not do and finish the job that he started. That was one of the real reasons I came to Syracuse.
How did you turn around your life as a student? Because early on, you struggled, you got yourself back in, and eventually you thrived at Syracuse and later in law school. How did you make that change?
Well, it was a challenge. I mean, it's how you do it. It's not about where you start in life. It's about where you finished. So my goal, because I had always been told that I wasn't big enough, strong enough, smart enough, or fast enough to do all the things that I love doing. If I never challenged myself, I've always believed none of us will know what we can become if we never challenge ourselves. So in challenging myself to be better than what I was and what better people thought I would be, it really helped me in my way to focus on being a better person, being one that has been gifted, that no one knew what gifts I had, but the only way I could find out is by pursuing them, by doing all those things that I desired to do regardless of what people thought about me. So I never believed what people said that I couldn't or could not do. That was the biggest challenge for me, having to overcome the obstacles and the pitfalls. And, you know, I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, so I had to play with the hand that I was dealt. So I played hard, and I worked hard, and I studied hard, even though I wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, wasn't the smartest guy in the room. But even a guy who's not so smart can reach his goals or objectives if he puts his mind to it.
You know, not only were you undersized as you went to the NFL, but you were also 25 years old as a rookie. What was that like?
Well, I had gone to military school 2 years. I missed 2 years in elementary school for being sick. It was different because I was the first round draft pick for the Denver Broncos. I was thus named the franchise. I wasn't expected to do a lot, but I was an every down back. I was on the punt return, kickoff return, extra point field goal team for 9 seasons. And I did my best to help this football team become the team that it is today. So if I don't sign with the Broncos, they move to Chicago or Alabama. It was an opportunity for me to go to a city that never had a first-round draft pick and to work with the team and its structure and help bring credibility to a city and a state that now is represented by a great football team.
They struggled, though, throughout your career, and a lot of people, when considering your Hall of Fame candidacy later on, would point to the fact that the Broncos hadn't been a winning team for most of your career. How was that when you were clearly one of the offensive stars and one of the great highlights of the team, but also to see the team struggle the way it did?
Well, I think it's just Denver didn't get the kind of respect that it deserved. I played with 27 quarterbacks and 50 offensive linemen, and yet I ended my career as the seventh leading rusher in the history of the game and played 5 Pro Bowls. I mean, it's not about the team, it's about the individual. If they don't think that my numbers are substantial enough, there was 30-some-odd Hall of Fame running backs. My number was, I was the 16th in all of what they've done, and yet I wasn't in. They look at it as it's a team deal. The Hall of Fame is not a team deal. The team helps you get to that level, but it's an individual performance. It's not the team performance. They said I never played in the Super Bowl. Well, it's not about playing in the Super Bowl. It's about what you did and what you accomplished as a player on a team that had 27 quarterbacks during my run and 50 offensive linemen. For me to acquire the numbers that I got without any help at all is a tribute to my ability to do things the best that I could do.
Years ago, I spoke with Greg Nettles, who was the Yankees' third baseman, a very high-quality player, but not quite in the Hall of Fame level. He got a lot of votes, but he didn't make the Hall of Fame. And I asked him, you know, does that weigh on you? Do you care about it? And he said, I don't care at all about the Hall of Fame. I know what I accomplished, and they didn't vote me in. But you spent 30 years in the wilderness, and you wanted to be in the Hall of Fame. It meant a lot to you. Why was that so important to you?
Well, it's not that it meant a lot to me. I deserve to be in, and so does Greg Nettles. I watched him as a player. I watched what he was able to do, but it's someone making the decisions on whether you are qualified or not. And it's difficult because he played at an era where there were some great players, but he had the numbers to get him in the Hall. And yes, he is concerned about it. I mean, he may say it doesn't matter, but it really does. When you do what you do as an athlete and there's people that are getting in or getting recognized for their life's work, and you know that your life's work was better than theirs and they don't even consider you, it's not fair. It's really not fair. I just think that he may say that he's not concerned about it, like I had said, but it really did. It really did bother me to a point where I wanted to get in while I was still alive. If they wanted to consider putting me in after I was gone, I told them, no, give it to somebody that's alive. Everyone should be able to enjoy that opportunity while they're alive. Their teammates, their family should be able to relish in the fact that you are a Hall of Famer, and if you're going to try to put me in when I was gone, then give it to somebody who's alive. And I know Greg Nettles deserves to be in, and I know it bothers him that he's not in, especially if his numbers is better than some of the guys that are in. So, yeah, it bothered me, and I would say it doesn't matter, but it really did, and because you want to be recognized for your life's work. And if it's a place where the greatest players in your sport finds themselves at the end of the day, and that's where you think you belong, and your numbers also says that's where you belong, then you should belong there. You should be there.
Well, let's talk about how it actually happened, because it's an amazing story. Your co-author, Tom Mackey, is a football writer, and you were his favorite player growing up, and he took up the cause of your Hall of Fame candidacy, and it was slow going until finally the story was covered in a memorable Sports Illustrated article, and that helped galvanize the support for your candidacy. Take us through how this all happened and how it ended up with you standing on that stage in Canton.
Well, Tom was a guy who was his brother was a Cowboys fan, and his brother wouldn't let him become a Cowboy fan. He had to pick another team, so he picked another team that liked the Broncos. So he picked the team, and he picked me. So when he was 7 years old, he tried to connect with me, and he never had the opportunity. So when he became 40 years old, His wife asked him, what did he want for his 40th birthday? This is 33 years later. He said, I want to meet my hero. And she said, who's that? He said, Floyd Little. So his wife called, found me, arranged for him to fly from D.C. to Seattle to have dinner with me or lunch with me. And he got a chance to meet me. And then he started doing all of the research. And he was like, why aren't you in the Hall of Fame? And I said, because I played in a city that really didn't get the kind of publicity. Never played in a Super Bowl. He said, but your numbers are greater than a lot of the players that are in. And the fact that you ended your career the 16th, 7th leading rusher in the history of the game, and you haven't even been nominated. The fact that you should have been nominated a long time ago is an injustice. So he went on the warpath. Put together 44 reasons why I should be in. He wrote several different articles in different newspapers.
44, he, of course, because your number was 44.
Yeah, 44. Then what he did was he talked to 44 Hall of Famers. Most of them I played against. Other than John Elway was the 44th, and Stan Jones, who was a Hall of Famer from the Chicago Bears that coached for the Broncos. And then in between, he talked to all the other Hall of Famers, and most of them I played against. And to the man, each of them would say, are you kidding me? Floyd Little not in the Hall of Fame, that's an injustice. John Mackey writes a letter. If you can't find a place for Floyd Little in Pro Football Hall of Fame, take me out and put him in. Let's validate what the Hall of Fame should be, honoring the greatest players that played the game. There was no better player than Floyd Little. Joe Green said I was the best football player he had ever played against. Not best running back, best football player. Same with Jack Ham, Jack Lambert. All of the players that they had interviewed said, are you kidding me? Floyd Little not in the Hall of Fame is ridiculous. And by having published that with all the writers by 44 Hall of Famers and having Gary Smith do that article in Sports Illustrated, people are like, wow, how did we miss this? How can we make this up? And finally they had a decision to say, hey, okay, this guy had a great career. It was just unfortunate he was buried behind where we couldn't find him, and now that we know who he is and what he's done, let's do the right thing and let's put him in the Hall of Fame.
After waiting all that time, was it a relief to get in? Were you, you know, just so proud to be there? Did you feel like a weight was off your shoulders?
Well, no, I just thought that it would be great if I could go in while I was still alive and my family could celebrate with me and my teammates can know that they played with a Hall of Famer. And it galvanized my whole team and all my teammates in the whole city because they all knew that I was a Hall of Famer but never got the recognition. So, yeah, at the end of the day, it was great.
This is obviously the highest honor any football player can garner. I stand here today celebrating my athletics life journey, and I understand the significance. Everything else pales in comparison. Every player suits up wishing one day to have this honor. And I encourage you all to continue to dream for this moment.
Floyd Little, what has it been like to be back at Syracuse, where this whole journey started for you?
It's been unbelievable because I have been known for most of my life as a game changer. Now I can be a life changer. That's more important for me now to recognize the journey that I've been on. And as I share with all of the athletes and non-athletes that come to see me on a regular basis, I can share with them the journey, share with them what it takes, share with them the joy of getting the great education, which is why you're here, and the value of surrounding yourself with people that are smarter than you are and learning every day and taking advantage of everything the university has to offer and here's how it works and here's what you can expect. When you get through the process, this is what you can expect for your life and for your kids and for your future and for your family.
Do you recognize the college game as being the same as when you played? I mean, it's become so huge as a business.
No, well, it's that players playing hard and making things happen. It's different because it's all about the dollars that you can generate by being in certain conferences. But the competition is still great. I think they have a lot more practice time than we had. I mean, we were more... Had a lot of classes. They have a lot of classes, and they're hard classes because I see it being tutored on a regular basis. But I think they practice more than we did. I think their time allotment for practices is a lot longer than what I played. But the physicality of the game is still greater than what it was because the guys are bigger, stronger, and faster. and the punishment is a lot harder, and the commitment on the game is a lot more than it was when I played. So the game has changed because it's a bigger investment for each player to practice and play and to go to class. I mean, it's just challenging for one, but I look at him and I greet him and I talk to him and I encourage him to keep going because it's going to be over so fast. You're going to look around and you're going to be a senior with 1 year left to go, and you're going to ask yourself what happened to the time. So enjoy the moment and expect to graduate. That's why you're here, and that's what we want to do. We want to graduate you. We want you to have an opportunity to succeed in life and do some great things for our university.
NFL Hall of Famer Floyd Little is the author of Promises to Keep, My Inspired Run from Syracuse to Denver to the Hall. The book is published by Triumph. Floyd Little, it's been an honor to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, you bet. Thank you so much.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.